Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. To ask a question during the Q&A session, press star one. Now I'll turn the meeting over to Scott Sarkrad. You may begin.
Great, thank you. Thanks everyone for joining us and welcome to today's webinar on the ESCA flexibility extension process. My name is Scott Sarkrad. I'm the Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Office of Elementary and Secondary Education. So glad that you could all join us. We've got folks on the webinar today from our SEA partners as well as from the Council for Chief State School Officers and some folks from the National Governors Association and some governor's offices, including the staff from Indiana. So just wanted to make sure everybody knew who all was with us today. So as you all know, on August 29th of this year, we released in draft form under the Paperwork Reduction Act guidance on the ESCA flexibility renewal process for those states that were approved for waivers in Windows 1 and 2. So those are the states that were approved to implement ESCA flexibility beginning in the 2012-2013 school year. While the renewal documents were out for comment in those draft forms, we received feedback from many stakeholders, including you all from the states, that caused us to rethink some of that process. And as a result, we're now offering instead a simplified process for receiving a one-year extension of ESCA flexibility. And so we sent information about this to the Chief State School Officers last week, and today we're going to review the requirements for receiving an extension, as well as the process and timeline for submitting your extension request. So first, there are three components of this extension request, which include, first, all states that are requesting the extension must submit a letter requesting that extension. If applicable for your state, you need to submit the completed form requesting to amend your current ESCA flexibility request, which includes the red line of your revised ESCA flexibility request, and this is in accordance with the existing ESCA flex amendment process. And then if, again, applicable to your state, evidence of resolution of any outstanding issues from monitoring or conditions or high-risk status that don't require an amendment to the flexibility request, and we'll talk in a little bit more detail about what each of these pieces look like. So the first piece that states will need to submit to request an extension is a letter from the SEA that includes the following elements. And we're going to issue a template letter that includes all of these elements, but wanted to talk through them and explain them a bit more on this webinar. So the letter will need to include a statement requesting the one-year extension, a statement affirming the state's continued commitment to the original flexibility assurances that you all assured to in your original flexibility request, a description of how the waiver has been effective in enabling the SEA to carry out the activities for which the waiver was requested, and whether or not the waiver has contributed to improved student achievement, and a description of how the extension is in the public interest. Now, these last two points, those two descriptions, are part of the No Child Left Behind law about the requirements for extending waivers, so these are two things that we do need to receive as part of the waiver extension request. And as I mentioned, this is the language from the ESCA that describes when the Secretary may extend a waiver. So in the extension request letter, states should address how the waivers have enabled the state to carry out their plans in their approved ESCA flexibility request. And some examples of this could be that it's enabled the state to target resources to implement interventions in the lowest performing schools and schools with the greatest achievement gaps to improve achievement. Or it could have been that it enabled the state to implement a statewide strategy for professional development focused on new college and career-ready standards. And the state would need to describe how those activities are contributing to improved student achievement. And additionally, as we mentioned, the Secretary may extend waivers if the extension is in the public interest. So this is something that will need to be addressed in the extension request letter. So for example, the state could reference how the extension will support continued focus on ensuring college and career-ready graduates, how the extension will support the state's effort to improve all schools across the state, or how the extension will support closing achievement gaps. And there are lots of other ways that the extension might be in the public interest, but these are just a few examples. So the second main piece of the extension request after the letter from the state requesting the extension is, if this is applicable to your state, a completed amendment request template describing the amendments that are required by the Part B monitoring, by any conditions that are on the state's approval, any high-risk status, or any optional amendments that the state would like to make. And as you all know, this amendment template is already available on our website, and most of you have already used this to make amendments to your request. So again, as most of you know from requesting amendments in the past, these are the elements that should be included in an amendment request. So the request must describe the element of the plan that will be affected by the change and how that element was originally approved. So it includes the redlined request, the form that describes the element, and the description of how it was originally approved. The rationale for the amendment, as you can see from the request form, also includes the why of the amendment, so what the change is and why that is necessary, and then how the amendment will help the state implement ESEA flexibility in a way that leads to improved teaching and learning for all students. Additionally, the amendment request requires consultation with districts and stakeholders on the changes that the state is making to its request, and the state should also consult with stakeholders on the extension request letter that the state needs to submit with its amended request. So there are a few examples of amendments that might be required as part of the ESEA flexibility extension process, and these include amendments that are needed to address outstanding monitoring findings, next steps, conditions, high-risk status. So, for example, a state that has withdrawn from a Race to the Top assessment consortium and needs to provide an updated plan to administer high-quality college and career-ready aligned assessments by 2014-15 would need to amend its request to reflect that new plan. And there are a couple of other examples here, but again, these are would mostly be things that would come out of a state's monitoring next steps, conditions, high-risk status, or other major changes that would require an amendment. And in requesting the extension, the states might also want to make changes to the approved requests as part of your process for continuous improvement. So there are lots of opportunities to make changes, and again, many of you have made changes already, but the extension request process is another way to look at changes and try to improve implementation through amendments. So for example, states might want to look at modifying the school rating systems to better include subgroup performance after having implemented the system for an entire year. States might also think about how you're providing more meaningful rewards to reward schools. And again, there are lots of examples of amendments that are in the vein of continuous improvement that states might wish to make as part of the extension request. And in addition to next steps from monitoring that are resolved through amendments, some next steps would be resolved without an amendment. So to get an extension, the state would need to demonstrate that other next steps from monitoring are also resolved, even if they didn't require an amendment. So for example, if a state had a next step from monitoring around issuing state and district report cards, then the state would need to demonstrate that it has issued those report cards, but that's not an item that would need an amendment to an ESEA flexibility request. So here's the timeline for the submission of the request for extensions. The In December 2013, we're planning on issuing the template letter. As you all know, we're in the midst of our Part B monitoring now and expect to issue our reports from November through January. And those are what states will use as the basis to make any required amendments if there are next steps included in those reports. States can submit their amendment requests on a rolling basis as soon as January or whenever you've received your report and are ready to request the extensions. And we'll receive the requests on a rolling basis through the end of February or within 60 days after your monitoring report. So again, the final deadline is either February 28th or within 60 days from receiving your monitoring report, whichever is later. We also expect to make all extension decisions by June of 2014 to make sure that states know their status going into the end of the 2013-2014 school year. So at this point, I'll stop for questions. We can take questions now, and then in addition, if there are questions that come up after the webinar or anything is not answered, please don't hesitate to contact your ESEA flexibility contact at the department, or you can email our main ESEA flexibility mailbox, ESEAflexibility@ed.gov. So at this point, we'd like to open it up for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. To withdraw your request, press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment. The first question comes from Jamie Lowe. Your line is open.
Okay. We're calling from Nevada, and reviewing the letter, it appears that really the only difference in this application is that we're not addressing the issues about educator effectiveness. So it appears that we still have to prepare a redline version of all the changes, either driven by the Part B monitoring findings or from our own understanding of what we need to do to improve our system. Is that the case?
Thanks for that question. That's a good point. And so the process is slightly different in addition to not including the elements that were in the original renewal guidance around Title IIA funds and the transition to using effectiveness data for equitable distribution of teachers. Those two elements are no longer part of the extension request, but additionally, the process will now be just using the letter submission as well as the existing amendment process to make changes rather than the renewal request form, which we had put out in draft form in August, and the process that's outlined in that. So that form also asked states to respond to, and there were 13 elements in that form, two of which were the teacher equity and Title IIA elements, but there were a number of other things as well, and states will not need to use that form or address all of those areas, but will only need to make changes that are required through next steps in monitoring or any changes that the state would like to make. It's still a red line request consistent with our existing amendment process, but it's really done all through the amendment process rather than through a new separate renewal process.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Lou Fabrizio. Your line is open.
Thank you. Scott, thank you very much for having this. I had two quick questions. One is very simple. Can I assume that you will email all of the people who are invited to this webinar, that you'll email us when that letter template is posted? That's the first question. And then the second one is, in your list of examples of amendments, it seemed to reference the issue that many of us have already applied for, which is to delay personnel decisions based on teacher and principal evaluations. So I'm assuming for those of us that have already submitted our proposals for doing the one-year delay, that is now considered separate to this new letter we'll be doing, that we need to wait until we get our results from our monitoring visit before we can even send that letter.
Yes, thanks, Lou. So on the first question, yes, we will email everyone on this call, as well as the chiefs, so all the chiefs and the state contacts when that letter, the template letter, is available, so you'll have that just as soon as it's finished. And then to your second question, yes, if you've already requested the teacher evaluation flexibility and made an amendment request for that, that is now separate from the additional amendment request that you would need to do for any required amendments from Part B monitoring and part of the extension request. We just want to make sure that everything is reflected in the final approved request.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Marianne Miller. Your line is open.
Yes, I had trouble getting into the webinar. When will the PowerPoint that was used today be posted so that I can get the full thing since I couldn't get in at first?
It'll be posted probably first thing tomorrow.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
The next question comes from Abby Javerick-Humig. Your line is open.
Yes, I actually have two very quick questions. One is how, through this process, are you anticipating that we handle things that really need to be technical corrections and updates as opposed to formal amendments to the waiver? And then the second question is, it's my understanding, looking at this new extension renewal request process, that this will be a one-year extension as opposed to the two that was going to be offered through the application process. And so I do want to clarify that. But then I also want to see, do you anticipate offering guidance anytime soon on a further formal renewal process that will take it out past the one-year extension?
Great. So those are three really good questions. So first, on the issue of technical corrections versus formal amendments. So if there are technical corrections that you'd like to make, you can make those at any point. Those normally don't require actual amendments, but you can contact your ESEA flexibility contact about specific technical corrections that you might want to make outside of the amendment process, and they can help you figure out if they are technical or if they are amendments. But for the extension process, we are anticipating that that would be mostly, or would at least include, actual amendment requests that are either part of responses to the Part B monitoring or other amendments that states might need to make. And the technical corrections can either be made through that process or at any point. Your second question about the length of the extension, so yes, that's correct. These extensions would be for 1 year, a maximum of 1 year rather than for a maximum of 2 years, which was in the original renewal guidance. Part of this is a response to some of the feedback that we heard, that really another year of implementation with a streamlined extension process would be really helpful to states. So limiting it to 1 year rather than two when we're going with the streamlined process. And then this leads into your third question, is that we would like to have some conversations with states, with all of you, about the future extension process. Obviously, we and I think all of you would hope that there would be a reauthorization of No Child Left Behind before then, but without knowing what's happening, we absolutely want to make sure we're still giving you all the guidance that you need to keep implementing your reform. So want to start having those conversations about future extensions or renewals very soon as well.
The next question comes from Veronica Tate. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Linda Wallinger in Virginia. We have a question about the timeline and the flexibility of especially the endpoint of that timeline. We have perhaps an unusual situation that our State Board of Education must approve all actions related to the ESE waiver. We do not have a board meeting in December, and we have to take things to our board twice. So we were all ready to go with our waiver request on Thursday of this week for first review, with final review in January to meet the deadline. Now, with the changes, I don't think we'll be able to do that. And I noticed that you had not changed the timeline any from the original information as well. It looks like we would have to wait for our monitoring report to be sent before we could submit. So what are your thoughts about timeline submissions?
So if there are specific issues or unique state issues, we're happy to follow up on those offline as well. But generally, the timelines are pushed back from the original renewal deadlines, and those were sort of windows throughout January and February, and now the deadline for the extension submission is February 28th or 60 days after you receive your report, your Part B monitoring report. So we did want to make sure states had enough time to review those reports and determine responses before having to submit your extension. So if you have about 2 months from the time that you received that report, at least 2 months before you would need to submit the extension request. But we're happy to follow up if that seems like for some reason that timeline's not going to work for you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Susan Haberstroh. Your line is open.
Yes, my question is around whether a state can submit the extension with the red line changes responding to the Part B monitoring report and then come back with amendments later and still get approved for the 14-15 school year. Just wondering about timing.
Sure. So if there are amendments that you want to make but are not ready to make them as part of the extension process or just want to make your changes that are required after the monitoring, you can absolutely do that. And then we're, as we've done this year, we're open to considering amendments beyond the extension process as well. We also did get a question from the chat that I just wanted to answer. Confirming that two-year extensions are not an option at this time, which is correct. Right now we're only offering one-year extensions, which, as we mentioned before, is a change from the original flexibility renewal guidance that was posted in August.
The next question comes from Marcia Calloway. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to ask a question about the renewal form that we got back in August, and ask if what you are saying is we're going to use the same form, but we're going to leave out certain pieces that you've now called out. For example, question 2 or item 2 in that renewal form is about the use of Title II Part A funds, so we would not address that, nor would we address at the end of the document 12 and 13 that have to do with the teacher and principal evaluation, because that's a separate waiver. And 13 is the piece about the equitable distribution of teachers. So will we still use the same form but not complete those sections, or are you going to send out a new form?
No, and thanks for asking that question to clarify. You will not be using the form that we posted in August. So in place of that form, you'll use the template letter extension request that we're going to be sending out in the next couple of weeks. So you won't need to respond to what was in that original form.
Thank you. A follow-up question? No, thank you. Hello?
Your line is open.
We can't hear anything.
Do we have another question?
Oh, no, thank you. I'm sorry, I said pass on. Thank you.
Oh, no problem.
The next question comes from Debbie Lichter. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Debbie Lichter from Maryland. I had a one question was answered about the submission of amendments, you know, after we submit our request for an extension. But the other had to do with the two amendments that were offered over the summer, the one on personnel decisions and the other one on the double testing. If states have submitted those amendments or are planning to submit them by the end of this week, will we hear the result of that before we have to submit the extension?
Yes, we anticipate that you all should hear the results from those in short order and before you would need to submit the request for extension.
Okay, great. Thank you.
The next question comes from Becky Chambers. Your line is open.
Scott, Becky Chambers in Georgia. Just a quick clarification. When the template letter is posted in December, is there a deadline for returning the template letter, or does it simply go in with the full extension request?
The letter would go in with the rest of the extension request. So the letter, in addition to the amendment template and the red line request reflecting the amendments, they would all come in at the same time by the end of February or 60 days after you get your monitoring report.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Sarah Pope. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Sarah Pope in Oregon, and we already have a process in place with USDOE to respond to our high-risk status, and I'm just wondering if we need to, I'm assuming we do need to include mention of that in this one-year extension, or if we already have that process in place, if that doesn't count as something that we need to talk about in this one-year extension as well.
Yeah, that's a great question. So that would need to be part of the extension request, would be showing that you're on track, either you've met all the requirements to resolve the high-risk status or on track to resolve it by the timeline laid out in the high-risk letter. And you can follow up with your contact as well about the specific work that you're doing and making sure that that's both that it's reflected in the extension request, but also that we don't want to be making you all go through double work or two processes for this. We just want to make sure it's all integrated.
The next question comes from Stephanie Graff. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for being here today. It's our understanding that the department was doing a data analysis for all states. I'm wondering if you have an idea of when these will be shared with states, if that's going to be coming around the same time as our monitoring report, or wondering what the timeline is for that.
That's a great question. So we are right now still in the midst of doing that analysis, and we hope to have that finished in the next couple of weeks. And then after we take a look at it here, then we'll be sharing it with states over the next couple of months. So we'd like to get that out to you before you're making your extension requests, but are still thinking about how to best incorporate that into this whole process. It was obviously a piece of the renewal process. Was going to be responding to any issues identified from that, and we're still thinking through and want to look at the results of that before making final decisions about how to start conversations around that data analysis. But we're hoping that we'll be able to give that to you over the next couple of months.
Okay. Thank you.
At this time, I'm showing no questions.
Any last questions from folks? Again, if you don't have questions now, please, again, feel free to contact your ESEA Flex contact at the department or email us at eseaflexibility@ed.gov. All right, great. It looks like that's all we have for today. So again, thanks everyone for joining us. And again, please don't hesitate to reach out if you have any further questions. And thank you all for all of the great work that you're doing in your states.
This does conclude today's conference. Thank you for joining. You may disconnect at this time.